Welcome to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. Comment is the big conversation, the great debate, but it can only be either of those if you join in. That's why, above all, I need your telephone calls. The number to ring is 44208-601-4555. You call us, we'll call you back, establish a clear line. And remember, if you got on the television with me, the volume on your television has to be down at zero, or I'll have to move on because no one will understand either of us. You can also SMS the show, and it comes up there on the comment wall, 44780008066, or you can email me at comment@presstv.co.uk. And this being the 21st century, you can tweet me at comment_PressTV. Two subjects tonight, both of them of great moment, and both of them inextricably linked. The first is the decision yesterday of the Saudi Arabian court to order the execution of Sheikh Al-Nimr, the leader of the Shiite minority in Saudi Arabia, for no crime at all. For organizing peaceful, democratic demonstrations to demand rights for all the people of what they call Saudi Arabia. It's called democracy protesting, and in some parts of the world, it would automatically attract vast sums of United States money and political and media support throughout the Western world. I'm thinking of Ukraine, for example, or Syria, for that matter. But in Saudi Arabia, it's covered up and its organizer is sentenced to death by beheading, don't you know? You'll know the beheadings that so horrify Western journalists and Western political leaders when they happen just across the border in Iraq at the hands of those whose ideology is very close to the ideology of the ruling Saudi regime, namely ISIS. So I'm asking tonight, what would Sheikh Al-Nimr's execution represent? Well, Iran has appealed for the life of Sheikh Al-Nimr, demanded that the Saudi authorities halt this execution by beheading. And if they are denied that, if the execution were to go ahead, the first and obvious consequence would be an extreme sharpening of the confrontation, contradictions between these two regional powers, Saudi Arabia and Iran. The second thing that would undoubtedly happen is that there would be a big reaction amongst the Shiite minority in the east, mainly of Saudi Arabia, and indeed amongst Shiites all over the world. And the third thing that would happen is that it would cause further damaging division between Muslims in the Middle East and beyond. That could only benefit those who have no time for Muslims of any kind, who don't know anything about the distinctions between Muslims, but are very happy to see Muslims fighting and preferably killing each other, and preferably still buying weapons from Western countries with which to murder each other. So I believe the consequences of the execution of Sheikh Al-Nimr would be exceedingly grave, would make every matter worse, and heaven knows we have enough trouble in the Muslim world already. And the second subject is, as I said, closely linked, because the Syrian Kurdish city that the Kurds call Kobani and the Arabs call Ain al-Arab is besieged by the fanatic savages of ISIL, who like to behead just as much as the Saudi justice system does. And my goodness, they have been beheading in Kobani. at the height of the offensive, ISIL controlled something like 30% of the city, and they laid it waste. They beheaded hundreds of people, many of them women, and posed for pictures holding up the heads of women. These also holy warriors of ISIL were also responsible for mass gang rape of female inhabitants of the city of Kobani. I wonder how they square that with their professed Islamist fanatic Puritanism. Some Puritans, I must say, they have beheaded old people. There was one story that particularly has etched itself into my mind. An 80-year-old grandfather had his head cut off in front of his children and his grandchildren. For what reason? It's very, very difficult to fathom, except to create a state of terror. Now, that has worked elsewhere. It worked in Mosul, for example. It worked in other parts of Western Iraq. Although there are reports today of tribes in the west of Iraq beginning to rise up against ISIL, and I hope those reports are true. But in Kobani, it hasn't worked. The YPG, the youth section of the Kurdistan Workers' Party, the PKK, have fought as heroes, written their name into the history books. They're mainly young, they're mainly leftist, and many of the fighters are women. And they have fought street by street, house to house with ISIL. And just in the last hour or two, there are reports that the military situation has begun to turn, and that from 30%, ISIL are now back down to controlling some 15%. So it may be that Kobani will turn out to be a turning point, will turn out to coincide with a turning point over the border in Iraq. But of course, there's still a very real danger that somehow ISIL will manage to conquer the city. Now, Kobani is very important strategically. If ISIL take control of Kobani, they will control almost the entirety of the Syrian-Turkish border. The Turkish regime of Erdogan has been building up these fanatic groups inside Syria for more than 3 years. Almost all of the money, almost all of the weapons, and almost all of the tens of thousands of foreign fighters, 500 of them, it's said, from Britain, thousands of them from Europe, but from all over the world they have come, and they've almost all passed without let or hindrance from Erdogan's regime across the Turkish border. ISIL would control that border almost in its entirety if Kobani were to fall. And the Turkish regime is under grave pressure now from all sorts of people, from public opinion in the West that was told that Turkey was one of us, a member of NATO, a fraternal country, a putative member of the European Union, no less. And yet it's abundantly clear that the government of Turkey is not prepared to lift a finger against ISIL, having made them and organizations like them strong in the first place. In fact, Turkey's substantial 20% Kurdish minority wants to cross the border to fight alongside the YPG guerrillas in Kobani. The Turkish regime is gunning them down. 30 of them have been killed. There's a huge Turkish military formation at the fence. Through the fence, just a few hundred yards away, are ISIL cutting people's heads off. The Turkish armed forces have not been permitted to raise a finger to stop this murder and mayhem by ISIL. Not only that, they've not been permitting Kurdish people who have gathered in substantial numbers at the border to try to get to the aid of their compatriots, their fellow Kurds, and have been stopped by the Turkish regime. So who would you blame if Kobani were to fall to ISIL? Turkey is number one on my list. But the other regimes in the Persian Gulf, Arab regimes in the Persian Gulf, have to take a huge slice of the responsibility, even though they are now, no doubt, rather afraid of what this ISIL phenomenon could become. And they know that Western public opinion, on which they depend, because without Western governments supporting them, these regimes would undoubtedly fall. They know they're in trouble with the ISIL phenomenon, but they also know that their fingerprints are on this Frankenstein monster that has been created in the region. Let's take the first call then on these two subjects. It's from Iran, from Javed. Javed, welcome to the show.
Hi, George. How are you?
By the grace of God, I'm good.
Go ahead. It's an honor to talk to you live.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Regarding the so-called death penalty for Ayatollah Sheikh Nemer,
yes.
I wanted to say that even if the Saudis proceed or do that, it will be just a beginning for the Shias who have been marginalized in Saudi Arabia and Bahrain. So even if it happens, Sheikh Nemer will be easily replaced by other brave Shia clerics. After the so-called Arab Spring or Islamic Awakening, some say, all Muslims want to make their own decisions. And I think in this act, I mean the death penalty for Sheikh Nemer, is a shame for Saudi King, King Abdullah, Saudi King, and other princes. Of course, it is not very astonishing, it's not very amazing, because it is expected from so-called Wahhabism or Salafist groups. And regarding your second question, I think the Saudis and also Americans are double standard, because they say we do not support ISIL or ISIS or IS, some say. But based on statistics, 70% of suicide bombers are trained and supported financially or fiscally by King Abdullah and Saudis. So at the same time, I am deeply sorry for Americans, because the Americans trained Osama bin Laden against Soviet Union as a jihadist, and then Osama returned them in favor. Now they are creating